Mark Campbell, one of the most prolific librettists in contemporary American opera, was not sure at first that writing an opera about Steve Jobs was a good idea.
I've had a number of socialist friends of mine saying, why would you write an opera about Steve Jobs? He was the worst capitalist. And I'll say, reach in your pocket, you probably have an iPhone there.
Tap for the news. Tap, set a date. Tap.
But composer Mason Bates was convinced he'd found the right subject for his first opera.
Steve Jobs' life was complicated and messy. He had a daughter that he didn't acknowledge for many years. He had cancer. You can't control that. He was, while a very charismatic figure, quite a hard-driving boss. And his collisions with the fact that he wanted to make everything sleek and controllable, yet life is not controllable, is a fascinating topic for an opera.
Rather than creating a chronological life story, Campbell says the collaborators opted for a fragmented narrative to reflect the man and his machines.
Steve Jobs did have a mind that just jumped from idea to idea to idea. It was very quick. And we wanted to tell an opera that is also very quick, that jumps around.
The revolution of Steve Jobs shifts back and forth in time over the course of 18 scenes, and Bates created a different musical world for each character. Since Jobs played guitar and spent much of his time dealing with electronics,
Steve Jobs has this kind of busy, frenetic, quicksilver world of acoustic guitar and electronica.
Jobs' wife, Laureen, had a calming influence, helping him focus, and her sound reflects that.
Completely different space of these kind of oceanic, soulful strings.
Not that again, not the right time.
Other characters depicted include Jobs' partner, Steve Wozniak, and the Japanese-born Zen priest Kobunchino Otogawa, who led Jobs to convert to Buddhism and served as a mentor for much of his life.
Kobun, the spiritual advisor, has an almost purely electronic world of prayer bowls and processed Thai gongs.
The opera's set echoes Jobs' creations, says director Kevin Newberry. After a prologue in a replica of the iconic garage where Jobs' ideas first took shape, the garage walls explode into six moving cubes with screens, which look a lot like iPhones.
We're doing something called projection mapping, where all of the scenic units have little sensors so the video actually moves with them. We wanted to integrate it so seamlessly into the design, because that's what Steve Jobs and Apple did with the products themselves.
Jobs' sense of design was enormously influenced by Japanese calligraphy, including the Enso, a circle that depicts the mind being free to let the body create. Bates says that also figures in the opera's title, The Revolution of Steve Jobs, with the capital R in parentheses.
Of course, there's the revolution of Steve Jobs in his creations and his devices. There's also the evolution from a countercultural hippie to a mogul of the world's most valuable company. And there's the revolution in a circle of Steve Jobs as he looks at the Enso, this piece of Japanese calligraphy, and finds that when he can kind of come full circle, he reaches the kind of completion that he sought so long in his life.
A life marked by a struggle to find the balance between human imperfections and the drive to create the perfect thing. Audiences have been wildly enthusiastic, even if critical reaction to the opera has been mixed. Now it's headed to Seattle, home to rival tech company Microsoft, and then to San Francisco, which will bring the piece full circle to the Bay Area where Steve Jobs grew up. For VOA News, I'm Naomi Lewin.